Hi, this is Totally PJ Souls, and you're listening to CineScare.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And with us, as always, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Piscady.
I'm having a Donnie Darko experience right now.
I'm having a deja vu experience right now.
Yeah, I am too. And of course, with us, as always, as well, is Jimmy O, Mr. James Oster, journalist extraordinaire.
I feel like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day.
No. Well, those of you in the audience who don't understand what these guys are talking about, I screwed up. This week, I was in charge of hosting the episode on here, and I didn't hit record when we started talking. So we've been talking for about 45 minutes. Yep. 45 minutes and talking about movies and everything else. And of course, we weren't actually recording. So now we're having to do this again, and we're short on time.
I can't believe Mark so eloquently explained the theory of relativity to me. I totally understand it now, but we can't repeat it because we don't have time.
I know. So. Unfortunately, the world is going to be without that. And so we're going to, because we are now short on time, we're going to skip past our movies we saw recently, which actually we really didn't see many. I will just quickly say there is a new movie on Tubi called Requiem for a Scream. I have to mention it because it's brand new. It is, Mark and I both agree, it's not horrible for, and this is the caveat, for a Tubi original. All right. It is a bit of a slasher. It's worth your time only if you're interested in watching a bad movie. But unlike other Tubi originals, it's actually relatively watchable. And then I watched Men, which I agree with Mark. I think it's really good, and it might wind up on my top 10 this year. I don't know, but I thought it was a strange, wonderful film. Very, what did I say, Cronenbergian sort of horror. Okay. So, having said all of that, this brings us to Joe's theme this week, which...
I love this song. Let's play it again.
Yeah.
Rock in high school.
It is back to school horror. You see how I timed that? It was like a
heat perfect there.
Yeah. Yeah, not bad, eh?
And you got PJ Souls in the movie.
So, right. I mean, PJ Souls. That's
movie
true.
Rock, by the way.
Rock and Roll High School. Did you see this movie?
Yeah. Have you guys seen it? Rock and Roll High School?
Oh. Yeah.
Excellent.
It's good.
Movie. Yeah, it's bad. Fun. You guys know it's a lead, and it's a musical. So.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll High School.
And, of course, I once again cut it off. So, Joe, why don't you take it away and tell us about our theme and start us off once again.
School is in session, and our first topic of the day is going to be Carrie. From 1976, the classic Stephen King novel turned into a wonderful movie. This was on Shudder for all of those of you wanting to follow along at home. This is the story of Carrie White, who is a shy, friendless teenage girl who's sheltered by her domineering religious mother. She unleashes her telekinetic powers after being humiliated by her classmates at her senior prom. That's my best Matt Speak impression.
It's pretty good.
So I do want to point out the all-star cast in this. We've got Sissy Spacek, PJ Souls, John Travolta, William Catt, otherwise known as the greatest American hero. We've got Nancy Allen as the, you guys would know her as the female cop in RoboCop. Sidney Lassick, who got his fame through One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was also in a recent film that we reviewed called Alligator. He was the pet shop owner. And, of course, Betty Buckley from Eight is Enough, which I know Mark has a soft spot in his heart for her.
She's cute.
She's lovely.
So, getting into this movie, they waste no time at all whatsoever. 1 minute and 13 seconds into this film, we see our first set of boobies. And we were all giddy as schoolgirls because of it.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to point out, Sissy Spacek was 27 years old playing a high school senior.
That is unbelievable to me because she does not look 27 years old. In fact, while I was watching it, I was like, she was cute as a teenager, but she wasn't a teenager. She was 27. That's weird.
Yeah. She could vote and everything.
Yeah.
Buy cigarettes and
She could drink
alcohol. You know? She could go to war.
The other actors, how old they were. Cause Amy, was it?
Everybody was like between the ages of 24 and 28.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they all look similar, but they were all way too old to be high schoolers.
Well, PJ Souls, I mean, this is a couple of years even before Halloween. And she, I think she was probably the youngest of them, or at least she looked the youngest of them. And I know in Halloween, she definitely looked, you know, as we've talked about before, horror movies or they always have people who are a bit older, but yeah, Mark.
Yeah. With PJ Souls with her hat, she got, Brian De Palma loved that hat so much. But John Carpenter hired her specifically because of Carrie. He loved that character and brought her over to Halloween because of Carrie.
She was 26, by the way. PJ Souls was when this movie
She's
was shot.
She's still pretty. Wow, I don't 26. Care what anybody says.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and she was, I think, was going to become kind of a big star there for a while because if you've seen the marquees when Halloween was released, the two names above the title are PJ Souls and Donald Pleasance. She was the Donald Pleasance was the big name, but if you look back at old marquees of movie theaters when Halloween was out, you know, like the marquee out in front on the street, it'll say Halloween and above it PJ Souls and Donald Pleasance.
You're kidding me?
No,
that's so bizarre. So bizarre.
She was not exactly a star at the time, but she was better known than Jamie Lee Curtis or really anyone else other than Donald Pleasance.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to bring this up again since we missed it in the old recording, but my debate about the ending of the midpoint of this film was for those of you who haven't seen it, Carrie is the outcast girl in this class. And there was no way she was going to get asked to prom. And Amy Irving tells her boyfriend to go ask Carrie to go to prom. Now, my question was, do we all think this is legitimate and a genuine act of kindness and remorse for what she had done and what Carrie had to incur? Or what the reason I even bring this up and what I keep going back to is if Amy Irving didn't have her boyfriend ask Carrie to go to prom, she never would have gone and none of this would have happened.
I'm going to jump in real quick with this. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case at all. In fact, I think it would be, if it was the case, it was a very sloppy way to do it because you didn't really get that. Usually you'd have a moment where you'd realize to see the change. Her change, she never, maybe a little beginning, which Mark can kind of talk more about, but she's not a bad person. She's a sympathetic person who actually cares in the end. I don't think that was the intention at all, because you always have to have the one nice person, the one willing to help. And I think she was, I think it was just, she legitimately thought she was doing something nice for Carrie. I don't think she knew what was going on. I don't think she knew they were planning something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely don't think that she was part of the blood, bath thing. You know, I think that was mostly the guys and John Travolta's girlfriend were part of that. But I feel now like I have to go back and at least watch that part where she tells her boyfriend to ask Carrie to the prom. Was it her boyfriend or just a friend?
No, it's a boyfriend.
No, it's my boyfriend. Yeah.
I have to go back and watch that again because I felt like she was asking him to do it as a joke, even though I don't necessarily think she was a part of the blood thing. But now I got to go back and watch that. Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. At the beginning of the film, you see shots of her. Basically, there's like remorse in her face, and then during like the detention scene, she's telling her friends who's throwing Nancy Allen. She's telling Nancy Allen, you know, basically shut the fuck up, stop, you know, causing any trouble. If you want to go to prom, you know, it seems like, you know, there was a turning point for her. And that was basically at the beginning of the film. And I absolutely believe that she was completely sincere.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe that's because I have a crush on Amy Irving, but you know.
That's funny.
Also, what were you guys' thoughts about the ending of this film? Like, why did the house have to collapse into oblivion on top of her?
Yeah.
That just seemed, I don't want to say that everything up until then seemed plausible because of the telekinesis, but that just seemed to push it over the edge of believability.
Well, I think that was more in the book. I think the book, I think the whole town suffers some damage, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe, to me, it was just like, this is Carrie just basically saying, all of this evil, this horrible mother, it just needs to be buried with all of it, just pure evil. And that's why I think she just brought it down upon them. I really do. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Oh, you mean the mother did or Carrie?
No, Carrie.
Yeah.
I think she just knew it had to stop, and she knew it wasn't. This was the end for her.
I think she agreed that with the mom that she wasn't going to be accepted. And that they were all going to laugh at her, and that she'd always be a freak. And so, yeah, I agree. I think she probably used her telekinesis to just kill herself and kill her mom. But I don't know. I would have loved to have seen, huh?
It didn't take, because you see the hand coming out afterwards.
It was a dream.
Yeah, dream.
True. Well, I don't know, because I do believe that ending, that last hand grab thing, was very famous jump scare. One of the first that I can think of, aside from maybe the head popping out of the hole in Jaws. Well, it was one of the first jump scares. And you can really, because I posted a video of that jump scare at the end of Friday the 13th, the original, where the girl is in the boat and he jumps out at her. There's a, you know, definitely there's an influence there from Carrie to this, the same kind of music and same kind of situation. Mark?
Yeah. What I love about Brian De Palma with this is probably some of the best split screen storytelling I've ever seen. During the prom, where she just goes absolutely like psycho, and they had the split screen and it's showing the, you know, the hose, you know, like blasting everybody, and she's like turning left and turning right, and it's so brilliant, it's so Brian De Palma, and I love it so much. And there's three versions of Carrie: 1976, then 2002, and then 2012. And the 2002 is absolutely horrendous. But the 2012, I forgot the actress who's in it. But
Chloe Moretz?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not bad. Yeah. They do a little bit too much of like the house looks exactly like the 1976 version and whatnot. But Julianne Moore is fantastic in it. I mean, I don't think you could have like recast somebody better than Julianne Moore.
Jimmy?
I think Julianne Moore was the best thing. And I thought it was a terrible movie. I thought Chloe Grace Moretz was bad. She was very horribly miscast in that. She's an okay actress. She's an okay actress, but I've always, she just didn't, it didn't, I didn't believe a moment of it. I compare, put her with the Sissy Spacek, no comparison.
No. Well, no. But yeah. I liked the 2012 version. I thought it was fine. But no, it's hard to compare her to Sissy Spacek. Yeah. Joe?
Once again, another shining example of how Mark and Jimmy agree on absolutely everything.
Yeah. Totally true.
We don't agree hardly on anything. I love it.
So Joe, what's the next one?
Well, I wanted to point out one last thing is I just love the subtle symbolism at the very end, the for sale sign that's in the yard where the house was, how it's in the shape of a cross.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, that was dumb. Next one, we're going to go to 1980. We're going Prom Night, which is on Shudder for those of you following at home.
Prom Night
was at a high school senior prom. A mass killer stalks four teenagers who were responsible for the accidental death of a classmate 6 years previously. Although it seemed way more than 6 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, of course, Jamie Lee Curtis and Leslie Nielsen are the only two people, in my opinion, that need to be pointed out in this film. And the most horrific scene in this entire film is watching Leslie Nielsen disco with Jamie Lee Curtis, his own daughter. At prom. I don't know why that part had to happen at all.
Oh, I thought it was awkward. Beautiful. I loved it.
One of my major notes in here that I've underlined twice is "Ugh, death before disco."
So awkward.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
There's many weird things in this movie, and they all revolve around the character Lou, who's like the town thug. Yeah. Nobody can wear a unibrow like Lou.
Yeah.
He's almost deformed looking.
Yeah.
But he's the bully. He's the thug.
So creepy, that guy. It was horrible. And he's got a cute girlfriend too. Like, what is the deal? And then that girl's walking down the street and that guy pulls up in a conversion van who's like not the most attractive dude in the world. And
no,
she winds up going out with him.
I love him.
She was cute.
Slick. That's Slick. He's got a great, that's my line. That's my note right there. Slick drives a groovy van.
Yeah. I want that van. That van's awesome. And I love that character, actually. You know who it's a redemption arc, even though this movie came out before Friday 13th Part 3, but I just recognized him as Shelly. It was Shelly who just kicked ass and got everything he ever wanted. He got the girl. He's smoking doobies out of a history book, and he gave up a hell of a fight before he crashed and burned. He did a hell of a job.
Now, I've got to point out, this movie is complete with bumbling detectives.
Oh, yeah.
And it starts right at the beginning when the girl falls out of the window of the asylum or hospital or whatever it was they were playing hide-and-go-seek in. The cops come. You can hear there's like an overdubbing where they say, oh, she must have been a victim of sexual assault. There's a broken window with glass everywhere, and she's falling. She's probably got her back broken, and her clothes are all on. Yeah, we're going to go right to victim of sexual assault.
Right. I wanted another cop to say, you always say that. You know, but I love the part where the cops come running into the building. Like they get out of the, most cops get out of the car and they're like, all right, what am I going to go see? But these guys go sprinting into the building. It's hilarious. And then one of them says, don't touch that. It might be the murder whip.
Right. Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, this was my first time watching. I think Matt, was this your first time watching Prom Night 2?
No, I'd seen it before.
Okay.
Yeah, but it had been years.
Yeah.
Hello, okay. Mary Lou.
Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. I had a poster of that and never watched it, but I had it on my wall, which is weird.
Oh, you should watch it. Watch it. It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, but so this is my first time watching this film, and I got to say I was bored for the first hour of this film. I mean, it wasn't until the third act of this film where I started to really enjoy the movie, mainly because when the killings started to happen. And the problem was these actors were way too old looking. If you looked at the kids at the beginning of this film, and then they say 6 years later, didn't match up at all. It just didn't match up. And so, especially Jamie Lee Curtis, but half the film was just phone calls with a shadow with a raspy voice saying soon. And then, there was no character development and the kills were boring and uninspired. I only enjoyed two scenes in this film, which was the fat guy in the van, Slick, as Joe says, and who put up a hell of a fight, and the blonde in the red dress,
Yeah.
With a great, great, great chase scene. Oh, man. Yes. That was fantastic.
I have a question about that, though. Is that the one where he was chasing her with the axe?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Right. He's like right behind her, takes a swing at her, and misses.
Yeah.
Entirely. Mm-hmm. Like, what do we need to put her on a tee for you to hit her? And then it like gets stuck in like a piece of something or other. I don't know if the wall or whatever. And she runs away. And then there's a real quick scene where the killer goes to run after and then stops and runs back. It's like, oh, I forgot my axe. And then yanks it out of the wall and goes and chases her again.
Yeah.
Like, how do you forget your weapon? You got one job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually really like that. I like the fact, here's why. I like that chase scene so much because he's not a killer. He's not Jason Voorhees. He's not Michael Myers. He's just some douchebag who's having vengeance issues. So it's like, he's not going to be good at that. He's not going to be good at carrying an axe. I love the fact that she fought back and she's not like taking it. She's like, F you, motherfucker. I'm not doing this. Not today. You know, I love that. I really love that.
And yeah. I also didn't understand why he had to make cat noises every time he was attacking somebody.
Meow. His cat noises.
It's like a cat screeching.
Oh, yeah.
I missed that. I don't remember cat noises.
Go back and watch it.
I don't think I want to.
He made like a screeching noise, yeah.
A couple, yeah.
It was weird. Yeah.
But the disco... We got to talk about the disco dance between Jamie Lee Curtis and her boyfriend. That was the most awkward.
Loved it.
You loved it?
Loved it.
I almost wanted to fast forward because, I mean, how long did that go for?
It's a long scene. That dance sequence
was so long. And then...
I was laughing. I was laughing my butt off during that scene. I loved it. Yeah. I mean, it was so dumb. But
she's
I loved
so
it.
Hot, though, man. Jamie Lee Curtis is so damn hot. I didn't mind. She's a good dancer, too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy? I mean, she also did Perfect. She, you know, which right. she was into. I'll be completely honest. I love if Jamie Lee Curtis is in a horror film, hell yeah, I'm there. Mm-hmm. No matter, I've liked even Road Games. Which isn't really a horror film. Virus. I didn't love that one. Sucked. But like everything else, I've really liked her in. So Prom Night, man, I have a special spot in this movie. It's kind of ridiculous. You were talking when we were kind of going through this. It is kind of an art house film. I mean, there's a weird kind of art house mentality to it.
Yeah.
With the way it's shot, the way it looks, those weird kind of funky shots with the close-ups and the kind of blurred vision. I like that. I love that.
There are a lot of quick jump cuts and fast zooms in this film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I even wrote that down as one of my notes, art house camera shots. There were some. Did you see Terror Train just when you're talking about Jamie Lee Curtis horror movies? Have you seen Terror Train?
100 times, yes.
I've never seen that.
I saw it once, but it was like 15 years ago.
Never seen it. Yeah.
One of my favorite horror movies. Yeah, I love
it. It's on a train, and it's like a guy with a clown mask, basically, right? Or something like that, or Groucho
Maybe
Marx.
Maybe you should do train horror as your next theme, man.
Ooh, train horror. That's funny.
Can we scrape 6 movies together?
Yeah.
Yes, we could. Trust me, we could.
What else do you have, Joe?
Next up, this is the movie that I was so excited to rewatch again, and now I'm not as excited. But
oh no,
we watched Teen Wolf, 1985, Michael J. Fox. Was on Fubo TV. An ordinary high school student discovers that his family has an unusual pedigree when he finds himself turning into a werewolf. Unless you've been living under a rock for the past 35 years, everybody knows this is Michael J. Fox. And it actually came out, this movie, Back to the Future, came out in July of 1985, and this came out in August of 1985.
Yeah. He was a hot commodity back in those days because Family Ties was one of the biggest shows on television on the biggest night of television because it was Family Ties, Cosby Show, Cheers, Night Court, and L.A. Law, or Hill Street Blues, depending on which year, because they kind of what Hill Street Blues ran for a while and then they switched it to Night Court, L.A. Law. But that was the beginning of Must See TV on NBC. And so Michael J. Fox was a huge, huge star back then, Joe. Mm-hmm.
And he has gone on record saying how much he hated this film. As a matter of fact, he said he was interviewed, I think, by Variety. He said, "I don't understand this. Steven Spielberg is down the street making movie magic, and I'm here playing a werewolf."
Mm. Yeah.
Which is why he didn't sign on for Teen Wolf 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him. But I mean, go ahead, Mark.
This film, Teen Wolf, was shot in 6 weeks because Meredith Baxter in Family Ties was pregnant. So the show took a break. So this movie was shot in 21 days. And that's why you see some basketball shots that are repeated, and you can see the dolly in the reflection of some store windows. But I love this movie. I think this movie's absolutely fantastic.
I just, upon rewatching it, I didn't realize how embarrassingly bad the dance scene was with Michael J. Fox doing his werewolf dance. And then the, Matt, who was the artist, the recording artist that we thought sang that song? Randy Newman.
Randy Newman.
Yeah. And then the Randy Newman-ish song that plays, that montage that plays for the next like 10 minutes when everybody realizes he's an actual werewolf, but it's not Randy Newman. It's like they couldn't even afford the real Randy Newman.
And there was another song that sounded like somebody else. I can't remember who it was now, but there were a lot of music montages in this movie.
I will say, when I watched this as a kid, I thought Styles was awesome. I loved him, but it sort of wore off on me when I'm watching it as I'm 49 years old. I'm like, oh, he's just annoying.
Yeah.
But we would be remiss if we didn't bring up with something I was totally unaware of until Mark brought it to my attention, is the fact that there is no penis being shown by an extra at the end of this film.
Nope, there's
none. No dicks.
Go ahead, Mark.
Mark, you want to explain
the dicks away.
What the penis situation was and what came of it?
Okay, so like we all heard like the rumor of like Richard Gere putting a gerbil up his ass. So this is pretty much a rumor that is like a cult rumor that during the end of the scene in the stands where everybody's like celebrating, and because you know Scott wins the basketball game, there's in the far left corner, there is a person midriff. You see them with their zipper down, and all of a sudden they cover up real quick. Scott's dad is like pretty much like two rows like below, and everyone thought that there was a dick pic. Apparently, there is not a dick pic, but this has been a cult rumor and a rumor that has been going on for years and decades. And even Family Guy mentioned it. It's a thing. I believed it. So when the last episode that we recorded, I said, "Hey, we could talk about the penis pic." And Joe's like, "What?" And all of a sudden, Joe and Matt starts doing the research. Found out that it's not true. It was a woman that had her zipper undone. And because her jeans were too tight, and that's what girls do, I guess, is
she was an extra.
She was an extra, and that her jeans were too tight, and that's what girls do is they unzipper their pants, whatever, and unbutton to just relieve themselves or whatnot. And so when everybody got up during the scene, she zippered up and all that, and so it looked like a guy basically pulled out his penis.
It didn't look like somebody pulled out their penis. It did look like a zipper was undone and somebody buttoned it up, but it's right at the top of the shot. Like how would they, they not go back? I mean, obviously, I guess they couldn't do reshoots, but
21 days that they shot this. They didn't have any time. They were under the gun. They had to release this right after Back to the Future because Michael J. Fox was hot.
They just flat out missed it because that shot of that girl's underwear is on screen for about 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that frame was so detrimental. And we're in the credits scene. Just cut it out.
Right.
It's not like this, like we wouldn't have figured out how the story ended. It was unnecessary. There's not even any dialogue in it. They just flat out missed it. They were asleep at the wheel.
Yep. They had to have been. Yeah.
But if there's ever a rumor about dicks in a movie, I know I'm going to hear about it from Mark.
Yep. Well, yes, absolutely. So what did you guys think about the transformation scene? Like, holy base, that, I mean, it was a pretty bad transformation scene. I mean, the lipstick on Michael J. Fox was this neon pink going, and he's going, geez, Louise, it looked so bad. And just the makeup, I mean, the heavy base makeup, it looked really bad. But what a great scene when Scott opens up the door to reveal himself as a werewolf, and his father's there. And what a wonderful scene that is.
Can I just say, like, this is my first time seeing Teen Wolf.
Really? And,
I wasn't a fan of Michael J. Fox back. I liked him, but I didn't like his movies in general, aside from a couple, Back to the Future 1. It's not a movie to watch when you're older. Because I didn't get it. I was bored. I thought it was stupid.
It was my first time too.
He's a charming guy. And he's amiable. I enjoyed watching him. But yeah, that was not good.
No, it was my first time seeing it too. And I liked it a little bit more than you. I could appreciate the 80s charm a little bit. But it's not a good movie. But I think if you saw it when you were 12, you know, maybe you'd have a more nostalgic feeling about it. But no, it's not one that I should recommend. Like, if anybody in the audience is an adult and had never seen it, you know, it's probably not one that you should watch. It's not a good movie in that way. No, Mark's about to explode right now.
He looked angry.
But Mark, so, I do have to say, I did not find that scene between him and his dad touching. I kind of just laughed, really. But go ahead, Mark.
Look, this whole movie is supposed to be about being you. It's okay to be average or below average. It's about loving who you are as a person. It's a fairy tale story at the end that most of us never get, but there are accomplishments in your life that you can take with you if you just be yourself. That's what you're supposed to take with it. And yes, there is nostalgia for me. Yes, I got a jacket that was blue with the gold sleeves, like a jacket. It was a London Fall jacket. And I got it just because of Teen Wolf, because I love this movie. I wanted to be Michael J. Fox because he was older than me. It was 1985. I was younger, and he was like the person to be in the 80s. And I love Teen Wolf. I love it.
That's good. So.
I got some Teen Wolf notes.
Dylan O'Brien was great, by the way. He was really good in this.
Who?
Dylan O'Brien. Oh, sorry, that was a series. That was much better.
So this movie was so popular that there was an animated Teen Wolf show released in 1986 that I watched.
Loved that.
Did you watch it?
Yes, I did.
It was good, wasn't it? And the town
wasn't
was called.
Great, but it was okay.
But the town was called Wolfenstein or Wolfen something. Yeah. But nobody knew that Scott was a wolf in the animated series. There was a movie a couple of years before Teen Wolf called Full Moon High involving a teenage werewolf, but he was on a football team, and that's just totally disregarded. Nobody ever really remembers this film. I think James does that, obviously.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Joe just showed a picture of the animated. And here's a fun fact. 1985 was a great year for Michael J. Fox. While Back to the Future was number one in the box office, Teen Wolf was released and it was number two. So Michael J. Fox had a number one in the box office and number two with Teen Wolf in 1985. Talk about being hot. Yeah. And in Italy, Teen Wolf was renamed Boy from the Future in Italy. That's what they named Teen Wolf because, Back to the Future was so hot. It was Boy from the Future. And that's what I have for Teen Wolf. Joe, thank you. And Matt, thank you for making Joe do it because Teen Wolf is a part of my childhood. And I finally reviewed a movie that I really, really loved. Thanks.
Wait a minute. We did a whole episode on The Lost Boys.
Yeah. You could literally throw a dart at any movie and Mark would be like, this meant so much to me when I was growing up.
He's emotional.
I mean, I've seen so much Corey talk here. I mean, a little bit, all the Coreys.
You don't understand. Yes, Mark.
I love film and the 80s is very special to me. So if you do any film in the 80s, I mean, it you might get me. It might hit me in the feels.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
You're very special to me.
Okay.
All right, we're going to get out of the 80s just because of that.
We're only on two movies, though, right? So we still got four to go.
No, we've hit – that was three.
Oh, that was three? Okay,
three. Yeah, we're on to number three. Four. We're past more. The halfway mark. Excellent. We're back from lunch. We're already on the
– Excellent.
We're going to go next to The Faculty, which was on HBO Max. That was from 1998. Yeah. And when Casey Connor, which is Harrington High School's – oh, God, I hate it when they do alliteration like that – their newspaper photographer witnesses the murder of a nurse and he sees her alive again. He decides to investigate this bizarre happenings. Again, I got to point out the amount of star-studded cast that are in these films. Josh Hartnett, Selma Hayek. Oh, I'm going to pause right there. Why in the hell is Selma Hayek in this film?
I know. Yeah.
She's too awesome to be in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That was my point. Famke Janssen, Christopher McDonald, who most of you would know in a Shooter McGavin, BB Newirth, which as you know, that's Lilith from Cheers. Robert Patrick, from the Terminator 2. Usher is in this, John Stewart and Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
Don't forget about Jordana Brewster too, Fast and Furious.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like the lead. Yes. One of the leads.
Well, the hot bitchy girl.
She's so beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. She's so beautiful
and she's real cool. I like her a lot. Nice.
And there's so many movies that are spoofs of other movies that have already exploited this, and I jump on their bandwagon every time. But really, they're going to have Famke Janssen give herself a really horrible bangs haircut and be real, insecure and demure and I can't. I don't want to raise my voice at anybody. And then all of a sudden takes off her glasses. Oh, she's smoking hot.
Yeah.
And she's got a backbone and a spine and she's not going to take any crap from anybody. I don't really care for that trope. And that's
right.
A big feature in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's a good movie. I think it's, it was an interesting, it was a pretty fun film. I thought there's some stuff that kind of bugged me a little bit. I didn't care for like that trope that you were talking about with the teacher who's and then becomes this sex symbol after, and then also the Josh Hartnett character I found a little on the annoying side. I felt like he's sort of a genius boy, but he's sort of a drug dealer and he's sort of this. And he's, it was just a little too cool for school for me. Yeah. Joe.
My note is Josh Hartnett is such a tool.
Yeah.
And if he's so smart, why is he repeating his senior year?
Right. Yeah. It was a little hard to believe that character.
I'm like, I could rattle off eloquent answers to questions in the middle of the class if I've heard them a year ago.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I took this class five times, so yeah. I'm going to rattle off the answers yeah. to you. Mark's about to explode again because we've talked about something that he disagrees with. And go ahead.
Josh Hartnett. I love Josh Hartnett's character in this. I didn't think he was too douchey. He got held back in for another year because he got caught peddling his caffeine sugar drug. That's why he got held back. He's a super smart, intelligent guy. Obviously, he had a chemistry set in his house making drugs and all that. But go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, does he know how to use a comb? Is a question.
Yeah.
That was the 90s haircut back then.
The Josh Hartnett style.
Literally only for him.
Only person in the entire film with that haircut.
I think.
And he had the same thing in Halloween H2O. Come on.
Yeah. That messy haircut is sort of his signature style.
It is.
I just found that character a bit annoying. But, yeah. A
couple other notes I had. I thought the CGI was really bad in this film.
Yeah.
And although it is the first time that I've seen death by a bleacher in the gym.
I know.
Fun.
Yeah.
And for the record, I really cannot stand it when people do covers of Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall and act like it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That one rubbed me the wrong way. But that's just me and the music thing.
I won't send you my cover of that song.
No, please don't.
Okay.
Mark.
Yeah, it's a Kevin Williamson film who obviously took bits and pieces from Varsity Blues, The Thing, Invasion of the Body Snatcher, Aliens, and of course The Breakfast Club, and whisked it all up to make The Faculty. Funny thing is that the script was actually written by David Weta and Bruce Kimmel in 1990. And Miramax discovered it and gave it to Williamson to punch it up with more characters, dialogue, and his own personal, Kevin Williams thing, because he was so, hot off of a Scream. And but he was supposed to direct that, but gave it up to Robert Rodriguez because he decided to direct his own screenplay, Teaching Mrs. Tingle, that came out the next year.
Yep.
Yeah. I have a question about the ending. Elijah Wood saves the day, spoiler alert.
Of course he does.
Kills that thing with the bleachers at the end, and nobody's around. So how does, fast forward couple of weeks or whatever, when things get back to normal, how does everybody in the town know about this? And he's like the headline of the local newspaper, and all of a sudden he gets the hot girl in the school.
Yeah.
Apparently Mark has an answer to this question.
Yes, I do. So the answer is that the good guys did not win in this film. In my opinion, I think James agrees with me. So when the queen is coming through the bleachers and spits it all out on him, one gets in him because at the end, it's a month later and all the characters' personalities are completely changed on how the aliens wanted them to be. So like you have Elijah Wood with Jordan Brewster. You have Zeke. As Zeke is the cool guy, right?
The jock. The ex-jock.
The ex-jock. Well, yeah, he's now with, Duvall. Wait,
Zeke is the drug dealer.
Yeah, Zeke. So Zeke's playing Josh football. Hartnett. Yeah, Josh Hartnett is playing football. And, he's with...
He's playing football and smoking.
And smoking. Yeah. And he's with the teacher, but all the personalities are now completely different than what they were before. Because things would have been, different before. Know. It's I'm telling you, they lost. They lost. And the aliens did take over. And that's why Elijah Wood is in the paper just to cover it up. That's what
When they killed the queen.
It spit out everybody.
All of their stuff leaves, right? All of the things inside them are gone because they killed the queen. Well, why wouldn't it? Why would it? They not leave him?
Well, it's because the queen shot out all the stuff, and he actually just took over
all this isn't the one of those students. Things where if you kill the queen that everybody else goes back to normal.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it is.
That was because their plan anyway.
Yeah. It was their plan, but I really think that the aliens actually won that movie.
I've actually heard that theory from other people too. You're not the only one, Mark. I have heard that from other people. Like, there are people that have said similar things regarding the ending of that. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, but it's possible. But it's a fun ending. I like the fact that they kind of left it a little kind of open. You could probably play around in that.
Hmm. Yeah. It makes you think. I think that's why it's such a good ending. It's like, oh, did it happen this way or did it happen that way?
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of puzzling endings, we're going to get to the one that I just could not wait to get to, which was Donnie Darko from 2001 on HBO Max. After narrowly escaping a bizarre accident, a troubled teenager is plagued by visions of a man in a large rabbit suit who manipulates him to commit a series of crimes. Was this the first time any of you guys watched this film?
No. It's the first time I watched it completely from beginning to end. This is one of those I had. The first time I saw it was on, I think it was on HBO or Showtime or something. I was with my brothers, but we were kind of watching and not watching. So I kept going back and forth to it. And then I've seen parts of it or halfway through to the end multiple times on television, but I think this may be the only time I purposely sat down and watched it from beginning to end.
It's the first time for me.
Okay. I'm going to point out the cast again, just because for any of those of you who have not seen this, just a heads up, I am going to get into some spoilers in a bit, but here's a reason just on the cast list alone of why you should watch this. Jake Gyllenhaal, Jenna Malone, Mary McDonnell, Holmes Osborne, who I absolutely love. He played the dad. Maggie Gyllenhaal, Patrick Swayze, Seth Rogen, Noah Wiley, Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
Don't forget James Cavall.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And this, I personally, not only is the cast tremendous, but I think the music, the soundtrack in this film
amazing.
Is awesome.
Yep.
Excellent.
And I love, there's, I don't know, tiny little things that were like, you know, nostalgic for me growing up, like the fact that the mom is opening scene when they're panning through the yard, she's sitting there reading Stephen King's It. And the fact that in Jake Gyllenhaal's room or Donnie Darko's bedroom, he had a M.C. Escher lithograph print on his wall, which is the close up of the eye with the skull in the center of it. That just I was a huge M.C. Escher fan when I was a kid and I had that exact same one on my wall.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
There's a scene at the beginning of the movie where all of a sudden an aircraft engine falls out of space and crashes through the roof of their house and demolishes Donnie Darko's bed. He, of course, is not in the bed because Frank the Bunny told him to go for a walk, and he basically is sleepwalking all the way to a golf course. And the Frank the Rabbit tells him exactly when the world is going to end.
Right.
And he ends up writing the days, hours, minutes, seconds, whatever on his arm. So he's not even around when this happens. Meanwhile, the sister is just getting home from a date. The mom is asleep in her bed. And the dad is downstairs in the living room. He was asleep watching TV when this giant engine comes crashing through their house and wakes everybody up. The next morning, Donnie Darko comes driving back on his bicycle, and his family, the whole house is surrounded by police and fire engines, and members of the FAA were there. The family, the rest of the remainder of the family, is standing in the street. And Donnie Darko comes walking up and the mom says, oh, there he is. That just seemed like such a superficial reaction to what really would have happened, which already puts you on edge. Like, huh? Really? There, an engine just crashed through their house where their son should have been sleeping. And he's, I can't even imagine that the family would know that he wasn't crushed by that thing as of that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a problem with that too. I enjoyed this movie because I had no clue where or how this movie was going to end. Besides the wonderful acting, a very original script, amazing soundtrack, I was still borderline 50-50 if I was enjoying this film. It wasn't until the last 20 minutes where the pieces of the puzzle fell into place and I had that ah moment.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed this film. I even more enjoyed doing research on Donnie Darko, on what this film meant. And there are so many theories of this. And it is like just layers of an onion that you could just go into. Like, fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah, no, I thought it was just a great, great movie. And I think I gave it 5 cuts. I think it's a masterpiece. And I just can't believe that this director, Richard Kelly, has really not done much since then that was anywhere near this kind of quality. Like, you know, he's done Southland Tales, you know, The Box, Goodbye Place. You know, there's really not much there that was certainly, you know, judging from this, you would think that this is like the next David Lynch or whatever, you know, like a new Kubrick or something. Like this, his career hasn't gone that way. But I'd love to see something that he could do, you know. I'd love to see him get back to this kind of thing if he can. I don't even know if he's able to do that anymore, Joe.
Okay. I have a question, but one thing I just want to point out, just because I went to a Catholic high school, I love the fact that when Donnie is asking Noah Wiley as his teacher mm-hmm. about predestination, predetermination, you know, all that stuff, like, do we have free will?
Right.
When he starts getting on the verge of getting into religion and contradicting science and religion, how he has to stop. Mm-hmm. I'm just so glad that they wrote that in there, because it's actually very true that they can't. They will lose their job. Mm-hmm. But my question has to do with the ending. So, and again, total spoiler alert. So on the final night, his mom is in the airplane that the engine cracks off of and drops down and actually kills Donnie Darko.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that means basically everything we watched did not happen.
Correct.
And if she was on the airplane, then how did we see her in her bed at the beginning of the movie? Unless that also apparently did not happen. But then also at the end, when the girlfriend or supposed girlfriend is riding up on her bicycle and she's asking that neighbor kid what happened here, and that was a kid named Donnie Darko. So that sort of proves that none of that happened.
Mm-hmm.
The mom is there, but right. She's standing off sort of by herself, smoking a cigarette by the tree while everybody else is crying and sobbing and weeping. I'm assuming we're to believe then that she is not real. She died on that airplane and she's a ghost. But if she was a ghost, how is the girlfriend on the bicycle waving to her and she's waving back? That's where I'm all puzzled.
Yeah, I felt like that ending was definitely open to interpretation. And I felt like the engine came from another alternate, like an alternate dimension, and went through a wormhole through, because the mom goes on the trip with the daughter, right? At what point in the movie? So it's not really in the same timeline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything that we saw would have been made up, so we don't really know when.
Right. But it's sort of like a different time. But I felt like the engine in that reality, the engine flies across some kind of wormhole, because they've been talking about wormholes, and winds up crashing into the house in another dimension is what it seemed like to me. And Donnie Darko just didn't listen to the rabbit that day.
Mark? Yeah. It's hard. I mean, but everyone at the end was waking up from a dream. It seemed like they were dreaming, and they all kind of had a recollection of what transpired during the whole entire movie that we were watching. That's why Patrick mm-hmm. Swayze was crying. That's why Frank the Bunny put his hand up to his eye because he got shot in the eye. It seems like they all dreamt of what happened there. And it was kind of like a recollection scene where the mom was where, because they a previous scene is Donnie's girlfriend waved at her and she waved back. It was sort of like a recollection, like I know that girl, but I don't know that girl. And mm-hmm. that's what I got out of it, because it's kind of like a superhero movie if you think about it. Yeah. It's a time traveler and he saves the world. Or did he save the world, or did he just, because like the end is coming. That's what, you know, the movie was saying. Was it his end or the world's end? That's mm-hmm. that's what I was always thinking, because it didn't really get to that point. You could go either way, but I always mm-hmm. thought it was Donnie's end, not the world's.
I agree. I think it's, mm-hmm. I think you're led to believe that it was Donnie's existence that ends, because mm-hmm. the grandma death whispered in his ear, everybody dies alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he never wanted to die alone. He's going, I don't want to die alone. And apparently he does, or does he? There's a sequel out. I don't know if you guys know this. It's called Darko S, and it's about Donnie Darko's youngest sisters that's in it, and it's the same actress even. And I hear it's really not that good at all. But
It's not great at all.
What a fantastic film Donnie Darko is. This is a movie you can rewatch over and over and over again.
Yeah. And there's a couple, I believe there's a director's cut, which is actually pretty interesting. It's a little more, I feel like it gives a little more answers to the, it's been a while since I've seen the director's cut. I didn't watch that one prepare for this, but like, I feel like it was a little more obvious as what the story was about. So I kind of prefer the version that we all watched, to be honest.
And I do have to say, one thing that I absolutely just laughed out loud was Patrick Swayze's self-portrait with the mullet.
Loved it.
Oh my gosh. The fact that they put in the famous Swayze mullet on that self-portrait.
Yeah, that was pretty
so
funny.
Amazing. It was so amazing.
I have to say, I was not a fan of Patrick Swayze in this movie, but I wanted somebody with a little more range playing that part. He's a little, I felt like, I mean, it kind of worked, but I wanted somebody a little closer to Tom Cruise in Magnolia. That kind of thing, maybe not quite that extreme, but someone with a little more range than Swayze had.
How dare you, Matt? He's sorry. A national treasure.
I know.
I thought he was totally believable as a pedophile.
I thought I did. I thought so too. I thought he'd say, that's a fucking pedophile.
The part that I thought was the creepiest is when they're doing the talent show, and I think it was a Duran Duran.
Yeah.
Or whatever that song's playing. There's that woman. She's a very heavy set woman with glasses on. That's like the judge of the talent show. Mm-hmm. And she's like taking her glasses off real slow and just like sort of looking at the girls and not, she was the pedophile. She was the creepiest girl.
Yeah. It was
she
totally
must work
creepy.
For the school somewhere, because she was next to the principal and the health teacher when they brought up the paper that said that Patrick Swayze was a underground kiddie porn ring or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. The director has a thing against kiddie porn and child abductors, because in Southland
that's
Tales,
a good thing.
That's a good thing. Yeah, real problem with them.
No. But in Southland Tales, there's a storyline where there's a storyline with these married couple abducting children and murders them, and it's so creepy. If you haven't seen Southland Tales, it's a creepy scene.
All right, we're gonna wrap this up and get to our last movie. This was Jennifer's Body from 2009. It's available on Amazon Prime. A newly possessed high school cheerleader turns into a succubus who specializes in killing her classmates. This has got another fairly decent cast, pretty big. Megan Fox, Amanda Seyfried, Adam Brody, Chris Pratt, J.K. Simmons, Amy Sedaris, all people you've heard of. My biggest question about this film that I don't think was ever explained is why in God's name does J.K. Simmons' character have a hook for his hand?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's just a school teacher. It's not needed for the story or anything. It's just, what a weird choice to have that in that film.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what a great choice. I mean, it's such an odd thing. It's so odd. And you're just like, why? I love that, though.
Yeah, I like those little details like that that you just don't know the answer to and you never find out, but it's just a neat little thing. Maybe there's a scene that was cut where they explain it or something, but I like those little things. Mark,
I think J.K. Simmons just said, "I'll do the film if I have a hook." It made no sense at all.
That's probably the most believable answer. It just sounds like something J.K. Simmons would want to do.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably. If he was like a shop teacher, that would make total sense and they wouldn't need to explain it, but he's like just a homeroom teacher or something. He's got a hook for a hand. It's just weird, odd choice.
I assumed he was a Vietnam vet or something like that and lost it in somewhere, but I don't know. I love this movie though. I think it's a fun, I think it was, I think it kind of suffered when it came out in much the same way that maybe like Buffy the Vampire Slayer suffered at first when it came out, that it seemed like it was going to be trite. And I think there's way more to this movie than meets the eye I think the script's pretty smart. I think Amanda Seyfried is that how you pronounce her name?
I think so.
I think she's fantastic, and I think she's grown into become a really good actor. But I thought Megan Fox was really good in this too. I think she was very underrated in this movie. Some of that I think has to do with her, presence in the zeitgeist or whatever, and her personality.
Transformers.
Yeah, and Transformers definitely. But I think it was a pretty good movie, and it's one that I think was overlooked and has gained an audience since. Jimmy?
Yeah, I think a lot of the reason it didn't do well is that there was a lot of people had a thing about Megan Fox, which is a shame because I actually really like her. She's a good actress, especially given the right role. And she's really great. And her and Amanda Seyfried have such great chemistry together. It's so fun to watch the two of them,
I don't know that I think she's a great actress or even good, but I think it was a role that was really good for her that she could play well. Like this was fair a role enough. Where she was very believable in this role and it worked with her, I liked it. And Amanda Seyfried, I think, she grounds it. She's legitimately a good actress,
Yes.
Mark?
Agreed.
No, go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to say, I think Megan Fox is self-aware of exactly what her limitations are.
Oh, yeah.
And what she can and cannot do on film. And, but I mean, to your point, I've seen her in, I think, two actual horror films, and I've genuinely liked her in both. I don't have a problem with her.
What was the other one?
She's decent. God, I cannot. Go ahead, Mark, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, it's Joe. I think the movie you're talking about is that Netflix. where she's it's kind of like Gerald's Game where she's handcuffed.
Yeah, I don't think I saw
to the body. I actually didn't mind Megan Fox in that, but this movie didn't hit well with me at all.
It was called Till Death.
Yeah,
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, this movie I didn't like. I enjoyed it mostly only because of Amanda. Say the last name.
Siegfried,
and the actor who played Chip, her boyfriend. None of the jokes landed with me correctly, and also I'm not a fan of Megan Fox at all. So big surprise, James and I are disagreeing on this. I think her acting is pretty much blasé. I don't find her attractive, even, believe it or not. I know it's absolutely crazy to think. I had a problem with the bar starting on fire. Just it went up like a bunch of matchsticks. No building goes up in smoke that fast, and the reactions in the bar was not even comical. The band came out and was going, "Hey, you look kind of tired. Get in the van." And she's like, "Okay." She gets in the van and just takes off. I mean, that's exactly the point where this movie pretty much completely lost me. Besides Amanda and her boyfriend Chip,
you didn't believe that Megan would get into the van with those guys.
There were people running out of the bar on fire, and she's just like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go in." They weren't vampires, you know, like putting her in a trance. It was just a band, and. So, like, what do I care, like, about this character if she gets in this van? She doesn't give a shit about people dying. And even Amanda's character was just like, you know, "Hey, you know, like, stay with me." That bar scene made no sense at all.
Mark, and then, I think Joe has something to say about this.
Go ahead.
Same thing I was going to say.
I got a question. So this movie has a bunch of vampires that are like in a 90s alt rock band. And they've got, they're possessed, and they end up turning Megan Fox into a succubus. You're okay with all that, but your suspension of disbelief ends with how quickly the fire spreads. That's what you have an issue with?
Yeah. I absolutely did have an issue with it. It was badly acted. It was badly shot. It didn't make sense to me.
This movie was the worst actor.
Did you see that fire?
He should have been fired.
What was the band that there was some band from the 80s that just did a concert? Just I don't know how many years ago.
Great White.
Yeah, it was Great White, and the place that they played in, because their pyrotechnics went up just like that, and a bunch of people died.
And that was played by the same fire.
Yeah. Jimmy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I saw that scene for a second, I was like, "Oh, is this a supernatural thing?" But then I was like, "No," because I actually thought of that exact thing where, you know, a lot of those fans died in that fire in real life. I mean, that crap just went up like that. So that's not. But I guess what Mark is saying is that like he didn't find the acting believable. He didn't find the. But I mean, for me, I was actually really surprised with this movie because I'm not a huge Diablo Cody fan. I think I brought up, I didn't like Juno. But I like this one probably mostly for the direction. I think she, Karen is a talented director. I also got to give, Kyle Gallner a shout out. Cause I enjoyed watching him in this too. He's a lot of fun. It's a good character for him. And I enjoyed it. I had a good time with this. It reminded me of The Craft. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's a fun, I thought it was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I like the ending I thought it was great.
The ending wasn't too bad. I mean, I was getting into it, you know, a little bit, but that's just because of Amanda and Chip's acting. That was basically it.
Chip is Johnny Simmons, who was also in The Guest. He's a pretty talented guy. He's a good actor.
Yeah, I liked him in it. I liked him in it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this isn't trivia by any means. I want you to cast a vote. Which movie out of the six that we watched do you guys think made the most amount of money?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Updated for like, because there's a long.
No, I'm not doing like inflation or whatever. I basically looked up the budget and the worldwide gross on IMDb. Let's not overthink this.
Can I go first?
Matt, what is your guess?
I'm going to say that I'd have to say Carrie.
Mark?
Teen Wolf.
Jimmy?
Ooh, I think I'm going to go with Mark on this one. I think it's Teen Wolf.
Could be.
Yeah.
Matt has it, and it's a really tight margin. Carrie had a budget of $1.8 million with a gross of $33.8 million, and Teen Wolf only made $31,886,611.
Really?
Yeah, wow. So it was really close. Now, here's
the next. Is this with inflation?
No, this is just what I looked up on IMDb.
Okay. Yeah, inflation think do this actually, for a Carrie would make even more.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well,
Now, which of the six movies do you think made the least amount of money?
Probably Jennifer's Body.
Mark, you don't have to raise your hand. Just go ahead and say it.
I'm going to go with Prom Night, but I think Matt's right.
I think Donnie Darko.
Jimmy's got it.
Yeah. Oh,
Donnie
yeah.
Darko actually had it wasn't a budget. Yeah, it had a budget of $6 million and grossed worldwide $6,980,000.
Yeah,
so it's just barely profitable.
Yeah,
it didn't become like Donnie Darko until its release, the video release. That's right. What made it a hit.
And, and cable and all that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So school's out. You guys are dismissed. That's
excellent.
All we got.
Well, thank you, Joe. That was I really enjoyed all the movies, they weren't all great, but even the ones that I didn't care for that much, they were all enjoyable to watch, and so that was a good pick, another stellar pick, Joe. And next time, the next pick is going to be our good friend Jimmy O. So Jimmy, what is your next pick?
Well, I was thinking, you know, we have the summer is coming to an end. Yeah. We're vacation time, but it's time for like Halloween attractions. And I'm going to go to Halloween Horror Nights next week. Yes. So let's go to an amusement park, shall we?
Oh,
God
right
damn it.
Right now, I'm looking at, and this could change, but right now I'm looking at the original Carnival of Souls, a film called Tourist Trap, which is a lot of fun, Hell Ride, which I think is an underrated little slasher, one of my favorites, The Fun House. I'm looking at Carnival of Blood from 1972.
Have you looked up what these are on?
No, that's my next step, but these... Okay. If there's something we have to rent, I'll switch it up. But the last one is Hell House LLC.
Oh, good one. I love that movie.
Yeah.
So I love that movie. Yep.
Let's get back to amusement parks and horror haunted houses. Woo!
Yeah, yeah, Hell House LLC is I really enjoyed that. It's a found footage, so Joe's going to be upset about that. But I think I think it's very creepy. It's a very effective found footage film.
Are there clowns?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised you guys didn't watch it when we did the clown one. I think I had recommended it. You guys didn't watch it, maybe.
No,
but
it's
one of my favorites from recent times. The sequels aren't so great, but yeah.
No.
Oh, that sounds good. We will post Jimmy's picks once he completely finalizes them online so everybody can watch them too. And any further announcements, Joe? Anything? You look like
no,
you had
I got nothing. Okay. No, I just I hope people visit our website, buy our merchandise, download our podcast, listen, and rate and review them, and
follow us on Twitter and follow us on Facebook and Instagram and the TikTok. Yes, Mark.
Yes, and we are so close on Twitter to reaching 1,000 followers. So if you're on Twitter, give us a follow. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, and the same is true on the TikTok. We're about 100 away from 1,000 followers on TikTok, and that means, which I'm really hoping that we can get to 1,000 before Shocktober, because I'd like to do some live streams, especially from some of the events I'm going to, or any of you guys can too. So hopefully, you know, if you're not already following us on TikTok, please go there and follow CineScare Horror Podcast on TikTok. And tell your friends to follow us too. I've been posting a lot of videos, some fun ones. And also my book is going to be released on September 20th. So keep your eyes open for that. Of course, I'll announce it more as we go too. So I guess that's it. So we'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night.